Thought Leadership Studio.
You're listening to Thought Leadership Studio, the podcast that helps you master high-level positive mass influence to create distinctive business niches, captivate an audience, grow your following, and change the game by changing the frame with strategic thought leadership.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Welcome back to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, and this is episode 89, Scripting Your Story with Lior Arusi, Transforming Leadership Through Storytelling, Thriving Beyond Resistance, Unlocking Resilience, and Embracing Change with Authenticity. What this episode will do for you is help you understand the shift in leadership styles, learning why the invincible leader mindset is outdated, and how collaborative storytelling can engage and inspire teams more effectively. Process the past to embrace the future by discovering how leaders can help their teams evolve by turning past experiences into tools for resilience and future success. Overcome pushback and cynicism by gaining strategies to address resistance to change and foster a culture of growth and adaptability. To leverage the power of personal stories, exploring how accessing and authoring your life's chapters can unlock resources and strengthen leadership capacity. To embrace gratitude for greater energy, understanding the impact of the gratitude denial syndrome and how accepting positive feedback fuels future achievements. And learn practical tools for thriving through change, taking away actionable insights for scripting your story, empowering teams, and leading through transformation with authenticity. But before we dive more deeply into this episode, in case you're new here, consider that I created the Thought Leadership Studio podcast to help listeners improve their thought leadership skills. So whether or not you consider yourself a thought leader at this point, consider that I've come to the conclusion that the practice of strategic thought leadership is now fundamental to effective marketing and helpful in any area of positive influence. It's about leading an audience to embrace a unique perspective that gives them more value. So this podcast is designed to provide an accelerated training process. And an important part of this is having models of excellence, for which I provide interviews of people who excel in one or more areas relevant to strategic thought leadership. And if you're listening on an app, make sure you visit the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com. It's linked in the episode description for a summary of the episode with a curated transcript, a story and images, and additional resources and offers. In this episode, I'm excited to introduce Lior Arusi, a renowned expert in customer experience and strategy execution. Strategic thought leadership inspires others through positive influence and new thinking, and Lior's work exemplifies this by helping leaders reframe their stories and embrace collaboration to drive change. Lior is an award-winning consultant, speaker, and author of 10 books, including Dare to Author, with clients including Mercedes-Benz, FedEx, and MasterCard. He emphasizes the power of moving beyond the invincible leader mindset, helping leaders engage employees and audiences with authenticity and vision. We discuss overcoming pushback, accessing personal history to build resilience, and thriving through change. Lior also shares actionable insights on empowering leaders to script their stories and turn past experiences into tools for future challenges. So without further ado, let's jump right into the interview.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Thank you. So I'm your host of Thought Leadership Studio, Chris McNeil, and I'm sitting here across the Atlantic Ocean via Zoom with Lior Arusi, who is an investor, strategy accelerator, speaker, and award-winning consultant known as one of the world's leading authorities on customer experience and strategy execution. He has helped some of the world's leading brands such as Mercedes-Benz, Delta Airlines, Walmart, FedEx, Johnson & Johnson, and MasterCard to author the next chapter in their success. He's the author of Dare to Author and has written seven previous books, including Next Is Now, Excellence Every Day, Innovating IT, Customer Experience Strategy, Exceptionalized It, and Passionate and Profitable. Great to have you here, Lior.
Well, thank you very much, Chris, for having me.
That's quite a background. And as we're talking, my pleasure. And as we were talking before we started recording, I am fascinated by the positioning of your book, Dare to Author. And we were just talking about some of the distinctions in leadership. Do you care to share some of that with our listeners?
Sure. So I think many leaders have been in the business for several decades, and they are tending to mirror their first manager leadership style. So as a result of it, 30 years ago, a lot of leaders acted like the invincible leader. Yeah, they have all the answers to all the questions. You just come to me and I'll tell you what to do. And there was an aura of, I would say, absolute authority. And we tend to mirror that today. The problem is, A, our employees have changed. And the second thing is that aura of invincible leader is actually creating a counter reaction where people do not want to follow somebody who knows all the answers. So if your aura is, I know all the answers, you just follow the orders. Well, guess what? Today's employees are not going to do that. And what I'm doing in the book is I'm teaching people how to use storytelling and personal stories to engage people and to create them as people who wants to join you. Because here's a very simple fact. Leaders, especially in business setting, are using numbers and facts in order to try to mobilize their people. It doesn't work. In fact, we conducted a study several years ago with Harvard Business Review where we benchmarked 422 companies and we asked them, how successful are your change programs? You know, you're trying to transform to something, whatever it is, how successful are you? And only 9% claim that they've been successful out of 100%. Now, if you substitute, Chris, the word change with the word future, you understand this is a major risk. If you cannot move towards the future, you're going to lose relevance. You're going to lose margins. You're going to lose your customers. So then we ask them, so what's the reason? What's the root cause? Is it technology? Is it governance? Is it budget? The number one reason is people reaction to change. People, we tend to respond to change with a sense of victimhood as opposed to a sense of opportunity. And my message to leadership is by you moving to actually daring to author the story and sharing those stories with your people, you're opening their hearts and minds to say, I don't know all the answers. I'm just like you, I'm a human being. I have a very clear conviction about the vision, but I'm going to work together with you. Please join me on a journey. It's a different style than coming and saying, here are the facts, go and do that. Because ultimately, people are mobilized and activated by stories, not by facts.
That's powerful. And I think, and you brought the example of leading companies, internal leadership, and which would apply to market leadership. And for the benefit of the listener, I would say and look at that being just as relevant for leading an online audience to embrace new ideas that you might want to share with them as a thought.
Absolutely. Again, we tend to think in a very rational way that facts will win the game. But you know what? I'll give you a very extreme example, okay? 9 out of 10 people who went through a heart attack will go back to their old ways of eating and lack of exercising within 6 months. The facts are the facts. But unless you're going to help them structure a new story of why it's worth for them to pursue another lifestyle, a more healthy lifestyle, they ain't going to do that. They ain't going to do that just because the doctor is going to spew facts at them. They will deny it. They will act like a victim. They will not embrace it. They will fight it in every way possible.
So it's the scripting of the new story. And to take just a step back, and we'll return to this piece in a minute, to give our listener who may not already be familiar with your work a little bit of context, what's your story about what led you on this path of doing this kind of work and this type of work in leadership specifically?
So my journey started actually in the technology world. I've been involved in both startups and large technology companies. And very quickly, I realized that my clients are buying technology, but they're not ready for the actual change. So they're kind of substituting the changes they need to execute with buying tools that they have no clue what to do with. And when I was looking for ways to help them out, I realized that no one is willing to own transformation. This company will do research. This company will do branding. This company will do training. But nobody was able to come and paint the picture to a CEO and say, you want to get from point A to point B, I can take you there, and I'm going to be accountable to the change of behavior of every one of your employees. And that's exactly when I decided to go and create that. That's when Strativity was born. I started in a small company out of my garage. Eventually, it grew to about 150 consultants with offices in Australia, Canada, London, and New York. And we've been involved in over 400 major transformation of some of the leading brands, and you mentioned some of them. So I've been in the business of helping organizations actually conduct the transformations they want to do. It can be due to a crisis. It can be due to an opportunity. It can be a change in regulations. It can be mergers and acquisitions. Whatever the challenge was, we were able to come with a toolkit and basically help them to do that. So the book was born out of very, very interesting insight. The common change management platform in the world, or knowledge in the world, and if you follow Cutter and this and that, it's the same thing. People are afraid of the future. People are afraid of the unknown. Help them by clarifying the unknown into known, and then they'll follow. I disagree with that. Our finding is that oftentimes, when we tell people that they need to change, what they hear as human beings is a negative judgment on their past. So if you're telling me, let's take a simple example. Until now, the company used Excel, and now we are moving to Oracle or SAP. I've been the Excel person. For 20 years, I ran everything on Excel. Now you're telling me that Excel is wrong and I need to move to SAP. That means 20 years of my life were wrong. You're asking me to process the knowledge that I've been wrong for 20 years. You know what, Chris? It's too big for me. So what people are struggling with is not the unknown of the future. They're struggling with how to process the past and evolve with it to the future. They are stuck in old chapters and they cannot convert those chapters into future resilience, which is exactly the essence of author, dare to author. Authoring your life story, be it professional or individual, is taking past experiences and converting them into the toolkits that will help you embrace the future with excitement and not with victimhood.
I love that. That's such a powerful reframe. And it makes perfect sense. And just the conscious act of scripting a story, making your internal dialogue, your interpretation of the world, your model of the world more conscious and taking control of that seems to have a lot of power in its own.
Correct. Because ultimately, I'm asking in the book a very simple question. In the story of your life, what is your role? Are you the victim or are you the hero? And my argument is if you are not proactively becoming the hero, you'll become the victim. And you'll become the victim of prejudice like imposter syndrome, biases like the gratitude denial syndrome, and variety of other things that are ultimately going to mess up your story, and you're not going to be proud of it. So it doesn't matter if change was planned by you or not planned by you, you can still make the choice to be the hero of that story. And the answer to how to deal with the unknown is residing in the past chapters that you never bothered to actually author. And the book, by the way, is not just text. There is actually prompt questions in every chapter to help you actually internalize it and apply it to yourself. So I'm not just leaving you with the concept. It's like half workbook where you can actually follow the questions, be honest in answering them, and you'll see how your chapters are going to start emerging.
That's powerful. And I love that identity shift from the victim to the hero. And we know from mythologist Joseph Campbell, who wrote The Hero with a Thousand Faces, that the hero's journey includes mentors, like the role you take for readers of your book, and includes adversaries, the guardians of the threshold. When you try to create change, that can create pushback. So what's your recommendation on preparing for and dealing with pushback while scripting your story from the hero's role?
Okay. So I want to take an example that is actually highlighted in a major chapter in the book, and we'll build up from that. So clients came to me during COVID and they said, Lior, total crisis, total darkness. We don't know what to do. And I said, okay, let's talk about how you feel. And they described to me their feelings. And ultimately, if I consolidate all the answers, it is unprecedented. And I said, factually, you're correct, but we're in a very bad place. Because when you say unprecedented, you also say I'm helpless. You also say I'm a victim. You also say I have no tools. And then I said, let's do an exercise. Let's leave COVID for a second aside. When was the last time you felt so overwhelmed by an unprecedented event? And for many of them, it was the financial crisis in 2008, 2009. It was dark. For those of us who went through it, it was dark. And I said, okay, thank God you survived it and maybe even thrived it. Let's go visit 2009. And we literally wrote it like a chapter. Okay, what was the situation? What were your fears? Who was the villain? What was the threat? How did you feel about it? What was the moment, the turning moment? What was the superpower? What were the new insights? And what was your victory? We wrote this chapter. We wrote it down. And then they discovered, through how they survived 2009, what are the authentic tools that are available to them to go deal with COVID? And I used COVID in the book because COVID equalized the playing field for all of us, because we were all victims at day one and nobody knew what to do. The health system did not know, the government did not know, academia did not know, the UN did not know, nobody. We all were victims. And I'm challenging people in the book. There's a whole chapter about COVID with prompt questions. Write your own story. So the first thing to deal with villains is, or the pushbacks as you call them, is first know where you're coming from and what are the tools that are available to you. Okay? So that's the first thing. Now, the next thing that I suggest to people to deal with is understand the emotions behind the arguments. Because some of those pushbacks are coming from a deep fear. And if we understand the fear, we can help them move on. Because when we look at the fear and the paralyzing impact of the fear, we're first and foremost putting a mirror in front of them and saying, you are acting as a victim. Is that where you want to be? And believe me, when I put that mirror in front of people and say, you're acting as a victim, is that where you want to be? Most people will say, no, that's not what I meant. I'm just in pain. So be compassionate. If you come with the strength of knowing your strengths and your superpower and your toolkit, you can then come with the passion and say to them, okay, let's focus. You have two options right now. You can act like a victim and focus on the power you do not have, or you can act like a hero and focus on the power you do have. Nobody have all the ultimate power. We all have power that we have and power that we don't have. Where do you want to focus? The book, by the way, have a specific chapter about cynicism, because a lot of those pushbacks are being manifested through cynical voices and through cynical comments. And I talk about the fact that cynicism is like cancer to productivity and to our life, because it may give you a quick relief of a joke, but it establishes a why bother attitude for the long run. So it further establishes you as a victim. So my best way to deal with people who are putting pushback is first knowing what your core center is and what's your strength, but then have an honest conversation with them and push the mirror in front of them. It says, you know, you can tell all these cynical jokes until the end of doomsday, but is it making you any better? Is it lifting you from that puddle of victimhood? And you have a choice. You can be a hero by focusing on the power you do have and not by focusing on the power you don't have.
And one of the things I'm getting from this that's really helpful is accessing your personal history to find resources that are helpful in this situation and whatever challenge you're facing now that you've exhibited in the past. Another piece is the structure of a story. You're bringing up finding your superpower, yeah, and charting the course. And those are elements of a hero's journey or a powerful storyline. And they seem to give it a structure, perhaps,
yeah, absolutely,
the path forward that is empowering. And of course, in strategic thought leadership, we talk and look at how to create stories, how to script things to enable leading an audience across a bridge to perhaps a new belief system or a fresh way of looking at an industry. So there's a lot, and one of the challenges is, and I've seen before, that there are those who believe that the strongest human drive is the familiar. So there's that aspect of getting out of the comfort zone. Is adopting the hero role part of finding the energy to leave the comfort zone to adventure outward from there into the lesser known territories?
I believe that it is, and I wanna build up on what you mentioned around the chapters. We all of our life are chapters. And what we don't do is we live through the chapters, but we don't author the chapters. What's the difference? You live through the chapter, you survive it. You author it, you thrive through it. Why? Because you extract from it the lessons and the tools that will help you in the future. When you do not engage in the authoring process, you live your life like almost a graveyard of experiences that are yet to be deciphered, that are yet to be explained, that are yet to be converted into the future tools. So absolutely, we need to engage in that. And there's something liberating when you go through those prompt questions and you look at them and says, you know what? I'm actually very proud of what happened there. You know, I thought I was a victim, but I was only a victim at the beginning. Eventually, I emerged victorious. And that's the story I want to tell to myself and to others. So absolutely, it's helping you understand what is your toolkit, what is your unique, authentic toolkit to deal with whatever the challenge, the next challenge is.
Inventory, your personal resources or your toolkit, yeah, you would call them as part of that. Could you give us some specific examples or a story that illustrates?
Yes, let me give you a great example. A lot of leaders, one of the jobs we don't like to do a lot is providing performance evaluation. Not, this is the time of the year. People don't like to do that, or it's going to come to you in January. And I'll tell you a personal story. So I was giving a performance evaluation to one of my employees, and she was a stellar employee that year. So I prepared a list of all the things that she had done well, and we're sitting together, and I'm going item by item. You took initiative here, and you did this, and I'm very proud of you for that. And I'm passionately sharing it with her, and I'm noticing that her face becoming more and more pale. She's very anxious. And eventually I stopped her and I said, what's wrong? And she said to me, can you just go to the bottom line of what's wrong? Because the more you're giving me this positive feedback, the more I'm anxious to know how badly did I do? Because clearly that's what you're doing. You're trying to sugarcoat it. And I looked at her and I said, what made you think that I have something wrong to say? And you're not listening to anything that I just said. And she said, I just give me the bad news, okay? Just give me whatever. And I said, there isn't any bad news. It was a stellar year. You're amazing. You've done a great job. And she was stumped. She didn't know what to do with it. And in the book, I call this the gratitude denial syndrome. I would submit to your consideration, to your listeners' consideration, Chris, that we are, whenever we hear positive feedback, we let it roll. We dismiss it. We downplay it. Oh, it wasn't a big effort. No, don't worry about it. No, everybody would have done. We dismiss, we downplay, we belittle. And by doing that, we are stripping and robbing ourselves from the future energy that should help us deal with the future challenges. Because those feedback, those positive feedback and compliments that you're getting are refueling you. They're reminding you what your strengths are. that are reminding you how you can make an impact on people, that are reminding you the power you do have, not the power you don't have. And by ignoring them so consistently, and we all do that, that's why I decided to term it the gratitude denial syndrome. We are robbing ourselves for future energy to deal with the unknown. And that's where we stick to the comfort zone and do the familiar because we don't believe we have the strength. So my best tactical idea for every one of your listeners, take stock of those feedback. Take stock of those compliments. Ask yourself, what part of me resulted with that impact? What part of what I did caused that person to tell me that? Because that's probably something I want to strengthen and do more and amplify. That will be my practical example.
That's a great point. It's so much better to build on strength than to just focus on what to fix.
Yes.
And we're not really broken. We just are learning machines. And sometimes we learn things that aren't useful. We need to relearn them. But people have infinite resources, so to speak, within themselves, if they know how to find them and organize them.
Absolutely.
I think some of your work is probably going to be especially fascinating in addition to the books of your consulting. I know there are consultants who are listeners. And I know I've done consulting, and it's a challenge. A lot of the sales cycle can be a challenge, and actually creating organizational change. In some cases, I don't know if you've seen this, but in my work, it's around changing the mental models of the leadership, because that's where the leverage is. What do you want to share with our listener about the challenges you've discovered and the solutions you've developed for creating positive change in the corporate world?
So I would start with something more on the business side. I've instituted with my team a very simple understanding. Advisory services is not a financial question. It's a religious question. There are people in organizations that believe that they can bring external expertise in order to help them be better. And there are people who don't, who think that they know everything. So the first thing that we focused on is find the people that believe that external advisory is useful and stay away from the people who have a bad track record with other consultants. And I use a very simple question when we would be in a prospecting environment, and I would say, what happened to the last two consultants that have been here? Have you implemented anything? And if they'll share with you what they implemented, you might be in a good track. And if they start giving you all the excuses about how bad they were and nothing and they didn't, well, maybe their religion is we know everything. So first thing for consultants, you're bringing your heart and soul. You want the place to be better. Make sure you are in the right track with the right people. That's the first thing I would suggest. The second thing that I always had to remind myself, leaders are first employees before they are leaders. They're human beings before they are leaders. They're jumping immediately to the role of leadership without asking themselves the very basic question, are you passionate about what you do? Are you enjoying it? Because you cannot be a leader if the foundational role as an employee is not set for you. And many of them are jumping straight to leadership without doing that. And the last thing, and this was, you know, I had several conversations with CEOs, and it's like, they got upset that I discovered something that they have not discovered, or that people didn't come to tell me that, and so on and so forth. And I used the following argument. I said, look, as a CEO of my own company, there's something I don't know, and I probably will never know. I don't know if I'm funny, because I don't know if they're laughing because I'm the CEO or because my joke was funny.
Good point.
And I learned to accept that I'll never know that, because in order for me to bring a certain level of conviction and authority, I need to let go a certain level of familiarity. My job is not to be their friend. My job is to be their leader. My job is to stretch their imagination and therefore their performance. So I often reminded leaders, find a way to find a story that they don't tell you, because the definition of culture is what happens when you leave the room, not when you are in the room. So find ways that can feed you the true voice that's going on there, as opposed to anything else. So if I summarize it, choose your clients wisely and don't go into a trap where people don't believe in external advisory. Treat leaders first as human beings before you treat them as leaders, and help leaders find other mechanisms to know the full picture. Because if it's just going to be the traditional top down or bottom up, they're not going to hear the full picture because people are treating them as the CEO.
That's right. It almost reminds me of the old role of the court jester in medieval courts, who was the only one who could tell the truth to the king without getting killed.
Yes, yes. So some people blame me that I'm using humor in order to facilitate certain truths. And it's correct, yes. And sometimes I'll deliver a speech and you'll have certain people sitting there and you'll see their faces like this. And I know they want to laugh at the joke, but uh-huh. They know that the moment they're going to laugh at the joke, they're going to validate my point. So you could see that sometimes the people get the point, but refuse to accept the point. And it's sometimes humorous for me to just like, let's find another joke to get them, you know, into the truth. But I use humor. This is, I would think this is my superpower. I use humor in order to deliver bad news. But I do that in a very respectable way. And maybe another way for consultants to look at their profession a little bit differently, just knowing the question doesn't know that they know the answer. Just because you just disclose to them something doesn't mean that they know how to get out of it. So don't assume that. Don't assume that your job is to expose the truth. Ask yourself, how do I provide them with tools that will not embarrass them, but still help them get to whatever resolution?
That's a great point. It's about implementation, not just exposing the truth. And I love what you brought up about humor. Humor to me is a fantastic teaching tool because it parallels innovation. This is about shift of paradigm. That's what makes something humorous, the shift in frame of reference.
Absolutely.
So you can get people to shift the frame of reference. So what's an example of someone shifting their frame of reference through your work?
So I'll give you an interesting example. I did a lot of work with organizations that are very, very process oriented. Very left side, everything is a process, everything has to be perfect. Some of them are coming from non-American background, cultural, societal, hierarchical environments that will not tolerate a mistake, just will not. And it paralyzed the organization because you'd give people assignments and they will not be able to complete them on time because they're searching for the 100% perfection, guaranteed, no, every possible situation. And what I started to initiate in those places to give people the power of performance, we said, you know what, let's just take 90 days and experiment. And our goal is to fail. Our goal is to fail as long as we learn. Mm-hmm. And what we noticed is that when we carve it out as a 90 days deliverable, we don't have to perfect everything because there's no way you're going to perfect it. So then you start making trade-offs. When I tell you that I'm not expecting an outcome or a KPI achieved, but I'm expecting a learning, that's all I want. I want to learn. You are more than welcome to pivot as many times as possible. We found that those were absolutely liberating for people, and they would take challenges that were by far more powerful than we thought they would do. Okay, I remember I'll give you just one. I mean, we dealt with a very, very tough cultural situation, and a part of it is because the company top down controlled everything, and people have no power to do anything. And somebody in finance said to me, you know what, I'm going to increase the authority of every manager from $25,000 to $100,000, and I'm going to simplify the expense reports because they're annoying and nobody likes them. And the truth of the matter is we don't really read all these things. And I'm like, you think you can do that in 90 days? He said, I'm going to go for it. And then he was actually dealing with a very complex technological vendor. And he went off and said, guys, you must have a solution for that. I'm not the only one. And you know what? Within 90 days, he increased the budgetary authority for managers four times the initial position and simplified the, and he got raving raving applause during the presentation. And he said to me afterwards, like, if it wouldn't have been for 90 days with the permission to fail, I would have never dared. Because if I had to guarantee them success, I will never be able to do that. So we give people permission in contained environments to fail as long as they learn, which then results with them attempting to do things that are much higher and bigger than what they would have attempted otherwise. And that's a trade-off that my clients are absolutely loving.
I'll bet. I mean, it's not the ideal a learning organization. How else can an organization be as flexible and adaptable in a fast-changing world like this?
But you know, Chris, I'll give you an example regarding this organization, and I've heard that in different ways in focus groups. Employees said to us, we're all empowered here. We're just empowered to make the right decisions. We're not empowered to make the wrong decisions. And you know exactly what's going to happen. If that's the vibe, if that's the culture, then guess what? They will make no decision.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. So this is fascinating. Now, you've written a number of other books too. How many books have you written? Is it seven or is it more?
So actually, it's my 10th.
Wow.
This is my 10th book.
So you're prolific. And you're doing the consulting as well. I'm sure you do a lot of speaking and so forth as well.
I'm doing some speaking, and I'm doing so. In 2018, I sold Strategy Group and stayed there for about 2 years. So actually, my time is divided a little bit differently these days. I'm also a father of five and a grandfather of five. So I do need to spend some time with my family after living the consulting hectic life.
Sure.
With 250,000 miles every year on United Airlines. So slow down that a little bit. I'm doing some consulting, not as much as I've done. I'm doing some speaking and writing, obviously. And I dedicate a lot of my time to pro bono work with nonprofits. So I take my skills and I would say about a good 40% of my time is nonprofits, just helping them their challenges, their strategies, their change, and so on and so forth, how to stay adapting to the customer or to the recipient of their services. Because here's the mistake that most people do. Customer is not static, it's dynamic. Whatever the customer that you served yesterday, he changed already or she changed already today. With all the empowerments coming through digital services and ChatGPT and whatever, and I wrote about it in articles that people can read on leorarussi.com, I published it on Fast Company and so on. I said, guys, ChatGPT is changing everything about customers. Customers are so emboldened and empowered today that they are becoming the brand and we are becoming the servers.
Yeah.
So how are you preparing yourself for that? They are dynamic. And that's why a lot of organizations, when they find success, they kind of try to hang on to it too long and they fail to see that their customers are shifting somewhere else. And then one day they wake up and says, where's my customer?
Like the rock band who has a hit with their first album and then gets afraid to continue creating new kinds.
Yeah, let's play that hit again and again and again. And you know what? Guess what? Don't be surprised if somebody else is going to come and offer new lyrics to new life situations with new tunes that will be relevant today.
Mm-hmm. Well, to some, writing a book is the pinnacle of thought leadership. And of course, getting recognition, making an impact with a book. And you obviously learn lessons that would be valuable to our listeners who are either writing a book or have written books and wanting to get better at or promoting them. Before we started recording, you brought up some great points about breaking your knowledge down to meet where your readers are at a little better, because you can have a central point you want to make, but you need to give them the dots to connect to make their way to that point. Can you expand on that a little bit for our listener?
Sure.
Share maybe how you've managed your time to write so many books while being so busy with these other things.
So let's start with that specific piece, because it was a piece of it. I remember that if you wrote a book and then you ask an editor to give you feedback, these editors, if they do their job well, are going to annoy you to no end. Because I ask questions like, what do you mean by this? Give me an example for that. I need a backup for that. And it's like, whoa, what do you mean? I mean, it makes total sense. And one of the editors took the time to explain to me. He said, Lior, knowledge is like layers. Like in a tree, you see layers, so you know how long the tree lived. And your statement is at the top of that layer. But there are about 5 to 6 layers of knowledge that are backing up that statement. You know them. That's why that statement makes sense to you. Your readers do not know them. They didn't live your life. They don't have those layers of knowledge that will make that statement valid, relevant, insightful. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to extract from you some additional knowledge that can make that statement that you're trying to make more available to others. So always think about, you know, when you write a statement and it makes a great sense to you, you're running a risk that people that do not have your background will not see it in the same way. So that's one thing. The second thing, and it's fascinating. I mean, I'll have people call me or send me an email says, oh, in Next Is Now on page 52, you wrote this and I highlighted it and it meant to me so much. And as a result of it, I did this, this and that. And you read this email, it's like, that's not what I meant. You completely took it somewhere else. And actually in Dare to Author, I talk about it, that people listen through their own backgrounds. And less experienced authors will see that as a failure, saying, how come they didn't understand what I meant? They never meant to understand what you meant. They meant to take your words, you're sending them out there, like those little boats on the river, and then they will accept them and they will touch their heart or their mind in whatever way that it was meant to do. And you'll have different interpretations or understandings. And that's the beauty of your work. Your work should not be homogenous. It should be opening ideas for people based on where they are at. And I think that's the blessing of words. In terms of how do I do that, I think the fastest book I wrote was 1 month, which was Passionate and Profitable. On that month, I was in Mexico City, Frankfurt, Seoul, Shanghai, and Tel Aviv. So plenty of flights. And I was just typing. I was just pouring my heart. I have to tell you, Churchill said that writing a book starts as a lover and ends as a tyrant. There's a lot of truth to it. If you're committed to a book, you better know why you're doing it and what message you want to share with the world, because the effort is significant and it takes time. If you're going to rush it, and everybody's tempted right now probably to go on Amazon and just publish it self. No, get an editor. Do it right. If your words are worth it, then they are worth being seriously considered and seriously written. Don't shortcut that. I've done both self-publishing and publishing with big publishing houses like Simon & Schuster and Wiley and Greenleaf, but I never shortcut the system. I never tried to push my words out before it went through the diligent process. So as annoying as it might seem to you, and as anxious as you are for your words to be on print, and hopefully you smell the print and we all get addicted to that beautiful smell, do it right. Because if you have something meaningful to say to the world, do it right. And if it's not worth it, if it's worth rushing it without all the diligence, then they might not be ready yet for the world.
That makes sense. I see there can be some value in giving up some ego in service of a better product by being vulnerable to hearing critique that can help you organize your thinking more helpfully for more people.
Yeah, I mean, if you're writing it for the ego, take the same money you're going to spend, get yourself a half a page at Wall Street Journal with your picture and say, I'm the best in the world. But don't publish a book.
That's right.
I mean, take the same money, get yourself a half a page ad in the Wall Street Journal, and the world will know that you think you're great. So, I mean, that's not the purpose of the book.
That's right. I saw. Well, this has been an awesome interview, Lior. And we usually wind these up, and you know, my pleasure. We wind these up in two ways, with two types of questions. The first one is knowing the type of listener we have in this podcast, which is all about positive influence online. What are the top three things that you'd recommend the listener do that they could start doing right away that could come only from you and to make a positive difference for them first? And the second kind of question is, how would someone find you and your work? And of course, I'm going to link to it on the page as well, but how would they find you if they're listening to this in their car thinking, I need to get a hold of Lior's book?
So the first question was, what are the three things you want the listener to know?
Yeah, or to do, okay. Three things that they can do
So here's let's start with that. Let me just the first thing I want you to know is that your life story is being written right now. Either you're going to be the author of it or you're going to be the victim of it, but it is being written. You're either a victim of your prejudice and fears and anxieties, or you're going to be the hero focusing on the power you do have. And it is a choice. I want you to know it is a choice. To be a victim, it's a choice. It's a default choice, but it's a choice nevertheless. So understand your life story is being written. End of story. The question is, who's the author? And it should be you. Mm-hmm. Second thing that I want you to know is that anything that frightens you in future and change can be very easily resolved if you convert your past experience into future tools and resilience. The answers are there. You just cannot leave those experiences unauthored, because then you are not equipping yourself to be future ready. And the third thing that I want you to know is, take an example of past experience, do the authoring process, and discover what your superpower is and what you stand for, because the future can be amazing. Regardless of the fact that you planned it or somebody else planned it for you, you can still make it an amazing achievement for yourself, but you do have to author.
Love it.
So how can you find me? LeorArusi.com is the primary source for all of my writings and sample chapters and articles. I update them. I publish at least twice a month new articles. So LeorArusi.com will be a great source. Get the book. Buy the book for somebody you love who you want them to change their life. It's time to do that. And LinkedIn is the other place where you can find me very active. Obviously, you'll see me on X and Instagram, and videos coming up almost every other day with some inspiration. So feel free to follow on those channels as well. But those will be the great sources. And my contact information, everything is on my website. So just reach out if you have questions or comments or anything else.
Fantastic. And to the listener, I'm going to link to all of this on the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com. So if you're listening on an app, that'll be linked to in the episode description. It's been quite a pleasure, Lior. I appreciate you.
Chris, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to join you today.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Thanks again for listening to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, strategic thought leadership coach and consultant and author of the upcoming book, Strategic Thought Leadership. And this has been episode 89, Scripting Your Story with Lior Arusi. Transforming leadership through storytelling, thriving beyond resistance, unlocking resilience, and embracing change with authenticity. Where we discuss topics like redefining leadership from invincibility to storytelling, from technology to transformation, leading change, from victim to hero, rewriting your life story, and transforming experiences into tools to unlock your potential. And if you're listening on an app, make sure you also go to the episode page, which is linked to in the description, which has links to Lior's website and social media and his book. You also get a curated transcription and other resources, such as the free Marketer's Guide to Strategic Thought Leadership, a guide to organizing the building blocks of your own thought leadership. I'm Chris McNeil. Thanks again for listening to Thought Leadership Studio, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.
Thought Leadership Studio.